The shir should be Le'ili Neshama, Nachman Moshe Ben Tzvi Hirsch, and the Neshama should have an Aliyah. Just reminiscent of not knowing birthdays, there's an interesting story about the Chafetz Chaim. The Chafetz Chaim, Baruch Hashem, as we know, was Zocha to a very long Arichas Yamim, well over 100. And when he was around 90, he wanted to leave Poland to visit, to go to the Aguda Convention, the founding convention of Agudas Yisrael. It was the very first convention. Many, many Gedolim were there, and the Chafetz Chaim wanted to go. Well, not that he wanted to go. He was asked to go. They wanted him to come because this was in Vienna. And they wanted him to go, but he didn't have a passport. And in order to get a passport, you had to have a birth certificate. And he was born at a time in a village when they didn't have birth certificates. So the only other exemption was if you were over 90, you didn't need a passport. On the other hand, how do you prove you're over 90 if you don't have a birth certificate? So the second exception to a passport was if you're an ordained rabbi, a clergy person, you didn't need a passport, or they would give you a passport without proof of age. The Chafetz Chaim did not have smicha. The Chafetz Chaim was already in his 90s. He happened not to have been ordained as a rabbi. So nobody cared. Gadol Hador, you know, the Russian government didn't really care. You know, if you didn't have official ordination, you couldn't go. So when he was well into his 90s, Rav Chaim Moser Grodzinski gave him smicha. And I believe there was no test administered. And that is how the Chafetz Chaim was permitted to go to Vienna. Now, the famous picture of the Chafetz Chaim, the standard picture, was his passport picture. And there are other pictures that are rare, that are more candid and actually more interesting in some ways, where he's sitting in front of his house and surrounded by his Rebbetzin, his daughter, and other people. And in the Haredi versions of the picture, they block out the women, but the original picture had the women in there. And they seem to have been, everyone was enjoying everybody. They were smiling and laughing. But that is not the famous picture. The famous picture is a passport picture. And the Chafetz Chaim was looking for a passport photographer that was a goy, who would not know that he was famous, would not try to sell the picture and be mefarsamit. And he finally found some obscure photographer, but the photographer somehow got wind that this was a famous rabbi. So as a result, that picture got circulated against the will of the Chafetz Chaim. So sometimes I've had occasion sometimes when shuls were hiring very outstanding people who technically did not have smicha. For whatever reason, they technically didn't have smicha, and they would sometimes ask me, you know, how can we hire a person who doesn't have smicha to be the rav of our shul? And I would, you know, often point out that the Chafetz Chaim didn't have smicha, and I'm sure if the Chafetz Chaim came down the pike, you would be willing to hire him again. I admit the logic of my argument is a little weak, but this was what I did for a friend of mine. I put in that work. But okay. Anyway, we're dealing with the most important event in Jewish history. That is Matan Torah, the receiving of the Torah, the purpose of creation. You have to remember that the whole world, the whole universe, kaviyachol, was holding its breath. Because if the Jewish people would accept the Torah, the world, the universe would exist. If they would have said no, the universe would cease to exist. Bated breath, waiting to see the momentous decision. Now, I'm sure over the years, all of you have heard or learned to the famous Gemara that Hashem held the mountain over their heads. And Hashem said to them, I'm giving you a choice. If you accept the Torah, that's great. If you don't accept the Torah, this will be your grave. Now that seems to indicate that the Jewish people were forced into accepting the Torah. But if they were forced into accepting the Torah, then number one, why would it be valid? If I sell something or I give a get or anything, unless a Beis Din ordered it, whatever, something done through coercion is not a valid action. And the second question is, that Chazal praised the Jewish people over and over and over again because the Jewish people said, Naseh v'nishma, we will accept your commandments, we will do it, even before we know what it is. That's why Naseh v'nishma is so important. If they would have said, Nishma v'naseh, that would have meant, Let's hear the deal, and then we'll consider it. Naseh v'nishma is giving HaKadosh Baruch Hu a blank check. We are committed to do what you want us to do, whatever it is. V'nishma. Now let's hear what it is. The order is very significant. It's not simply two phrases. It's hikdimu naseh v'nishma. But the question is, if they were forced into it, what's the big deal? Yeah, they said naseh v'nishma because the mountain would flatten them. So mimanafshach, did they accept the Torah willingly? Or did they accept the Torah through coercion? The Maral has a very, very wonderful interpretation. The Maral says that the mountain was held over their heads after they accepted the Torah, not before. They certainly accepted the Torah willingly. After they accepted the Torah willingly, Hashem informs them how lucky it was they made the right decision by basically saying, you should know that the decision that you just made is the reason why the universe still exists. Had you not made this decision, there would have been no purpose to the world. Now, if Hashem had told them that before, that would have missed the point, because then they would have accepted for ulterior motives. In other words, they had to accept without an ulterior motive. And then and only then does Hashem tell them how important this decision was. The world would have had no meaning. It would have had no purpose. This is what the Navi Yirmiyahu says. Imlo barisi yaimam balayla. Chukos shamayim va'aretz lo samti. If it's not for my covenant of Torah for which we are supposed to learn day and night, that's how Chazal interpret the verse, the laws of heaven and earth would not have been made. The world would have ceased to exist. And that is why the very shamayim va'aretz were holding their breath, hoping, whatever that means exactly in that context, that the Jewish people would accept the Torah. Now it's interesting that Ramban writes, you know, the Rambam, Maimonides, wrote a Sefer HaMitzvos. He listed the 613 mitzvos of the Torah. And that's not as easy as it sounds, actually. The Rambam had to develop a whole methodology, because if you take every commandment in the Torah, you get something like 5,000 statements. Hashem said, do this. So the Rambam had to develop, when are things part of one mitzvah, when are they separate mitzvahs. The Rambam had a whole methodology of 613. The Ramban, Nachmanides, wrote a number of criticisms. In other words, the Ramban argues with the Rambam on a number of commandments. Of course, this is the classic zero-sum game, because if you're wedded to 613, every time you add a commandment to the list, you have to take away another commandment. So that's how it worked. One very famous example of a commandment that the Ramban adds is the commandment, the mitzvah of living in Eretz Yisrael, which the Rambam does not count as a positive commandment, and the Ramban does. And there's a whole question who the halacha is like. The Vilna Gaon actually says the halacha is like the Ramban, so Baruch Hashem, everyone in this room, at least if you live here, you're mekayim the mitzvah every day, and if you're visiting here, there's also a mitzvah for while you're here of being in the land. But a less known example of what the Ramban adds is the Ramban says, just as there is a mitzvah to remember the exodus of Egypt every day, there is a mitzvah to remember Maimed Har Sinai every day. In fact, that's why it's called one of the six zechiros, but the Ramban actually counts it as one of the 613 mitzvahs to remember Maimed Har Sinai. And what that means is that to some degree, one is supposed to re-experience Maimed Har Sinai, because every single day we are re-accepting HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Torah. Just like I don't say I ate breakfast yesterday so I can skip it today. Every day, need a new breakfast. Kal v'chomer, ben benoshel kal v'chomer. We are not Jews today because we were Jews yesterday. We are not Jews today just because we were born Jewish. But every single day, one has to have a sense of renewal, a sense of commitment. And that is why you remember Maimed Har Sinai. Because every single day we are supposed to be saying to ourselves, saying to Hashem, Naseh v'nishma. Every single day. Because otherwise it's automatic pilot. Otherwise you're just doing the same thing today because you did it yesterday. And although that still has value, it does have value indeed, but it's not the same as doing it with renewal. I think I mentioned before, you know, in L'David Hashem Ori, Mizmor Chafav that we recite throughout Elul, from Rosh Chodesh Elul until Shemini Atzeres. So there's a famous pasuk. It's been set to many, many nigunim, right? Acha Shalti Meis Hashem. There's one thing I ask from Hashem. Shifti Beveis Hashem Kol Yemei Chayai. May I dwell in the house of Hashem all the days of my life. Lachzais Benayim Hashem, to see the sweetness of Hashem, the pleasantness of Hashem. Ulevaker Beheichalo, and to visit His sanctuary. So the Mefarshim say there seems to be a contradiction. On one hand, he says, I want to dwell in the house of Hashem all the days of my life. And then he says, and I want to be able to be a visitor. Ulevaker. If you live in the Beis Hashem, you're not a visitor. So what is Shifti Beveis Hashem Kol Yimei Chayai? Lachzais Ulevaker Beheichalai. So the Sifrei Sidur say a beautiful thought. David HaMelech wants to be aduk. He wants to be connected with Avodas Hashem all of his life. Never stop. But he wants to have the enthusiasm of the first-time visitor. You know, those of you that have sons that are bar mitzvah, so you remember the first time a child puts on tefillin, how much excitement there is. Even though it's difficult to keep it on the arm, for some reason when we start putting on tefillin, the ritzuos all collapse. I don't know. Somehow we grow out of that problem, but initially there's always that difficulty. Or any mitzvah that a person does for the first time, there's so much excitement, so much geschmack. And then what happens is, you know, it becomes a habit. You get used to it, and it's nothing special. David HaMelech is mispalel to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That with all of his tedirut, with all of his constant avoda, he should always have the enthusiasm of a beginner, one who is approaching it for the first time. And that's why he says, Shifti Beveis Hashem, Kol Yimei Chayai, Lachzos Benayim Hashem, Ulevaker Beheichomai. So as a result, it would seem, if every day, according to the Ramban, we are supposed to re-experience Matan Torah, it would seem that if we look at how Klal Yisrael prepared for Matan Torah, these would be lessons for us in our daily re-experiencing of Matan Torah. So here I want to share with you a tremendous thought from the Orach Chaim HaKadosh, and that is in Perek Yotes Pasuk Aleph, which is the beginning of the Matan Torah story. So the Torah tells me, B'chodesh HaShlishi, the third month, counting from Nisan, right? Nisan Iyar Sivan. Latseis b'nei Yisrael mi'eretz Mitzrayim, from the time they left Egypt. Bayom hazeh on Rosh Chodesh itself, bo midbar Sinai, they came to midbar Sinai. That is Perek Yotes, Pasuk Aleph. So we already know where they are. Pasuk Aleph tells us they are in midbar Sinai. But after we know that already, Pasuk Bey seems to go backwards and repeat information we already learned. Vayisu Mirfidim. They had left the oasis of Refidim, which at the end of Parshas Beshalach is where Amalek attacked us. So we know that from Beshalach. Vayavo Midbar Sinai. And they came to the Sinai Desert. But we know that from Pasuk Aleph already. We just read that. And then it says, Vayachanu Bamidbar. And they encamped in the Midbar. Well, if they came there, that's where they encamped. And then it repeats in camping a second time. Vayichan Sham Yisrael Neged Ahor. So, of course, it switches it from plural to singular, which Rashi does give us an answer. We'll come back to that. So, the Orach Chaim says, all of Pasuk Beis is a superfluous Pasuk. I know where they left. I know where they came. And why repeat Vayachan, Vayachanu, and Vayichan twice? So the Orach Chaim tells us, that Pasuk Beis is not describing the geographical journey from point A to point B, because that we know already. We know from Beshalach and Pasuk Aleph that they left Rephidim, they came to Sinai. But rather, Pasuk Beis is understood in a metaphorical, allegorical sense, to refer to the spiritual journey that Am Yisrael had to undergo before they could be worthy of accepting Hashem's Torah. We know, of course, that the whole period of Sfiras HaOmer, the 49 days from Yitzias Mitzrayim to Matan Torah, and the Matan Torah was on day 50, was a period of spiritual preparation. But the Or HaChaim locates in this one pasuk four distinct steps that Am Yisrael needed to take in order to be ready. So we have a very nice four-step plan. Doesn't sound too hard, four steps. But of course, this is always the case. Much easier said than done. Step number one, leave Rephidim. What is Rephidim? Well, on one hand, Rephidim is a place. It is a physical place where Amalek attacked us. But Chazal darshan that there's a specific reason why that place became known as Rephidim, or why Rephidim was where Amalek attacked us. Because Rephidim is really a contraction of two words. That is, Rafu Yedehem Min HaTorah. Now this is an idiomatic expression that actually does not translate that well in English. Rafu Yedehem Min HaTorah literally means their hands were weak or loosened in connection to the Torah. Now that's not really an English expression, but the concept here is this. When you care about something that you're holding, you hold it very, very tight. If you're crossing King George or Karen HaYesod, and you're holding your two-month-old baby in your arms, you're going to hold the baby very, very close. Because God forbid, something that you care about, you don't want to slip out of your hands. If, on the other hand, you happen to be holding whatever it is, half of a garinim, that, you know, whatever it is, it happens to be in your hand, you know, you don't want to deliberately litter, I hope, although some people are guilty of that in Israel. But if accidentally, you know, it falls out of your hand, no big deal. It makes no big difference. So the idiomatic phrase, Rafu Yedeyim, is when you don't care about something that much. And Chazal say that the koach of Amalek mibachutz, to destroy us, is only if we have a certain aspect of Amalek within us that makes us vulnerable to the koach of Amalek. And the koach within us that makes us vulnerable to Amalek is called Rifyon Yadayim. So Rifyon Yadayim means that even if a person does mitzvahs, even if a person learns Torah, even if a person does everything right, if they do so with a sense of boredom, indifference, lack of passion, lack of excitement, chas v'shalom, burdensomeness, that is called rifya in yadayim. And Amalek has that achiza, it grabs hold of you. Now, you may think, well, I don't see the big connection here. When I think of Amalek, I don't think of, you know, indifference. I think of evil. I think of Hitler. I think of, you know, axe murderers and suicide bombers. In other words, the fit of the indifferent. But the emes is, if you look in the Svarim, you do get a different picture of Amalek. Amalek is described, at least in the Sifrei Chassidus, although they attacked us, obviously, not as this radical evil that is committed to some ideology, even if it's perverse. Rather, Amalek represents moral relativism. Amalek represents the idea that there is no truth. The only truth of Amalek is nothing matters. It is a nihilism. The Sifrei Chassidus, based on the Ari, say that the gematria of Amalek is safek. It's very different. It's different. In other words, I mean, it's hard to differentiate because all evil looks the same to us, but it's different than the suicide bomber. Suicide bomber is, of course, evil, evil, evil. But it's evil devoted to a perverted cause. Amalek, on the other hand, represents the concept there is no cause. There is no value. It's epitomized by Esav, who is the grandfather of Amalek's own statement, Hinei anochi holech lamus. V'lama zali b'chora. I'm going to die. There's nothing after I die. There's nothing at all. And therefore my life is all about getting what I can get. And when there's a nation that stands for morality, for values, for purpose, I will destroy that nation with every fiber of my being. In that sense, if you look at Hitler, Yimach Shemo, you see that Hitler literally, now again, I'm not going to get into the issue of whether genealogically Nazis were from Amalek. That's a question, and we don't have a definitive answer to that. But if you see, Hitler had a great, great hatred for religion, and he considered to be Judaism the beginning of that religion. Why? Because what does religion do? And he wrote this. He wrote this. He was very, the truth of the matter is, he was very honest. I have to say, everyone has some mila. And he said exactly what he believed and exactly what he would do. And nobody paid attention. And he hated Judaism because Judaism put constraints on human power. Judaism says the powerful cannot oppress the weak. That you have to give up the things you could do because they're not good, they hurt people. And he did not want any type of constraints on human power, based on Nietzsche, that the most important value is the ultimate power of the human being. Anything that limits power was seen by him as first. So Amalek represents the idea there are no moral values other than the self. There is nothing important but the ego. There is no reason why one person should care about another person and certainly care about some higher ideal. And therefore, Amalek represents Suffolk. Nothing matters. And Amalek was willing, that became its ideology. Amalek was willing to kill and destroy based on that ideology. And therefore, in a lesser degree, when we have the attitude of Rifyain, Torah doesn't matter. It's a burden. I'm complacent. I'm smug. I do it because I'm simply going through the motions. That is a bit of a kesher to Amalek. And when one has that weakness within, that allows the Amalek mibachutz to have some power over us. And therefore, the first and foremost step to Matan Torah is we must leave the attitude of Refidim. Vayisu mirfidim. Embrace the Torah with joy. Embrace the Torah with enthusiasm, with passion. And again, we have to know, Rav Tzadok makes the same point by a different word. In Parshas Ki Tzetze, which is the mitzvah of remembering Amalek, right? The war of Amalek is described in Shalach, and the mitzvah of remembering Amalek is described in Parshas Ki Tzetze. But when HaKadosh Baruch Hu describes the war of Amalek against us, it says, Asher korcha baderech. Now literally, korcha is translated, they encountered you. And again, there Chazal say, it's connected to mikra, happenstance, coincidence. There's no hashkacha, there's no God. But Rashi brings another medrash, that korcha does not mean encounter, but korcha means they made you cold, kri roots. And the mashal is that when the Jewish people left Mitzrayim, all of the world was afraid of them. Here was a nation that just left Egypt with 10 plagues and Kriyas Yamsuf, and nobody dared touch them. The Jewish people were like a boiling hot bath. Nobody dared approach because they would get burned. Amalek was the very first nation that jumped into that boiling bath. And of course they got burnt. But they made the bath a little cooler for the next person. Korcha, they made you cold. Because what is the attitude? The attitude is that attacking the Jewish people was no longer unthinkable. Yes, Amalek did it and got burnt, but maybe we can be successful next time. In other words, it's possible to do. That's what Rashi says. Amalek made you cold. Rav Tzadok takes the same etymology, made you cold, but he runs with it a different way. Rav Tzadok says, and it's the same point as Chazal used in the word Refidim, but he reads it into Korcha. the shayrish, the root of Amalek, is coldness in Avodas Hashem. One could do everything right, but there's a coldness within their neshama. One doesn't respond with love and enthusiasm and yiras Hashem. And the truth of the matter is, Reb Tzadok actually calls this Amalek. This is how serious he takes this. This is a root of Amalek in which one has karirus halev. One is like an evan. One is like a stone. In fact, the Gemara says one of the names of the Yetzer Hara. The Yetzer Hara has many names, but one of the names of the Yetzer Hara is evan. And I think the simple pshat of the Gemara is when the Gemara says the Yetzer Hara has many names, it doesn't mean the same Yetzer Hara has many names, but it means there are seven different types of Yetzer Hara. And one of the types of the Yetzer Hara is the lev ha'evan, the stone heart, the heart that doesn't feel, the heart that's not open, the heart that doesn't respond. Rav Tzadok says that is Amalek, the coldness of the heart. And therefore, easier said than done, obviously. Vayisu mirfidim, leave the indifference of refidim. Embrace the Torah with joy and enthusiasm. But Moshe Feinstein used to say, I've mentioned this before, that the old Yiddish saying, Tzeshver Tzeshayne Yid, it was hard to be a Jew, he felt resulted in a whole lost generation, because as you know, the generation of Jews, basically in the United States, between basically 1900 and World War II, almost, was 90% lost to religion, even though many of their parents tried to be religious. But things were very hard. Many, many from people felt they had to work on Shabbos because otherwise their family would starve. Because those who tried to keep Shabbos, and there were some heroes, there definitely were heroic people, the Young Israel movement and the like, Irving Bunim, the Philistines. Again, I mean, one could count it. Again, I don't want to slight anyone. I'm sure you may have people in your own family that were the heroes of that time. But they were a mi'uta de mi'uta de mi'uta. The vast majority left. And Rav Moshe said later, although you can't give one reason, that if the attitude that they absorb is that Yiddishkeit is so hard, and they come to a land of opportunity, unlike Poland or Russia, where they could be whatever they want to be, at some point, you know, why do I have to live such a hard life? And Rav Moshe said, if the attitude could have been conveyed more about the joys of Yiddishkeit, that would have had a different point. And the point is, I have to say, that even if a person is fortunate enough that their kids are not off the derech, doing mitzvahs in yeshiva, but we have to acknowledge that sometimes the lev ha'evan is a very, very serious and live issue. It's not just, you know, kids who don't keep Shabbos. People who are in yeshiva, in kollel, have their own children. The lev ha'evan. And this Rav Tzadok says is the kriyas halev, and this is vayisu mirfidim. Okay. We then come to step number two. And now you'll notice Midbar is repeated twice. Vayavo Midbar Sinai, Vayachanu Bamidbar. The Or HaChaim said that is because Midbar does a double duty here. Midbar picks up two functions. The first function of the Midbar, and here, Baruch Hashem, when you live in Eretz Yisrael, you could see all types of climates within a very, very short drive. So just go 5 miles, whatever it is, you're going to be in the desert here. But many people, I don't know many people, but some people, particularly artistic people, they actually love the desert. They say there's something beautiful about the desert. What is so beautiful about the desert? So they'll say something like, its emptiness, its simplicity. Not a lot of buildings, not a lot of stuff. Just the sky and the occasional cactus and the sand. And the very emptiness that it is devoid of things and materialism gives it a certain grandeur and beauty. So the Or HaChaim says, the second step to being able to accept Hashem's Torah is that one should strive for a simplicity of life that is not overly mekushar. It is not overly connected to the incessant pursuit of materialism and hedonistic pleasure. Now, this is a tricky one, because on one hand, we are not ascetic. The Torah itself says that the Nazir is a sinner, and according to the Nazir who takes a vow not to drink wine, and according to Rabbi Elazar HaKhapor, which is the one that Rashi brings, although there are other opinions on this, the Nazir is a sinner because he is depriving himself of a legitimate pleasure that Hashem wants us to have. Hashem wants us to enjoy the world, to appreciate the world. Chazal or Mishabeach even. The spiritual values of a nice home, etc., that it helps a person focus and concentrate. And certainly looking at the beauties of the world can bring a person to a greater appreciation of Hashem. So the point is not to be menatek yourself from the physicality of the world. One should enjoy it. In fact, there's a famous Talmud Yerushalmi that kids in yeshiva sometimes use against their parents on Chol HaMoed, that a person will get punished for every pleasure they could have enjoyed in this world that they did not enjoy. Because Hashem is going to ask you, why didn't you enjoy this pleasure that I put for you? So all of this is true. And indeed, even Gedolim like the Chida. The Chida was a great, great Gedol 250 years ago. One of the great poskim, a great mekubal, really one of the great gedolim. He wrote 30 volumes of svarim in all areas of the Torah. But you know, his job was, it's funny, I mean, he was a gedol hador, but his job was he was a mashulach for the institutions in Eretz Yisrael, and he went to collect money, and he traveled throughout Europe. And he made a point, wherever he was, to always visit the museums and the zoos. And among his Torah svarim, there are actually travelogues and diaries that he put in as well, because he thought that was also part of what he was supposed to do. Look at the world and see the niflos, habore, and the like. The Chida is an abbreviation. Rav Chaim Yosef David Azulay. Ches Yod Dalet Aleph. The Chida, one of the Gedolei HaPoskim, absolutely. And yet, he talked about the British Museum and artifacts and zoos and different animals. He was just interested in all of these different things. But at the same time, we have to admit that if one is, the more deeply one is involved in the world of materialism and hedonism, the less sensitive a person's heart is to ruchnius. And there's actually, there are spiritual reasons, of course, but I'll give you a simple common sense reason. And that is, physical pleasures tend to be more instant. There tends to be instant gratification. Spiritual pleasure requires work and effort and time. And it's always the case that once we get used to things coming very quickly, we don't have the patience, we don't have the zitzfleisch, so to speak, to invest the time and the effort for something ruchani. I mean, even in physically it's that way. If a person lives on junk food, they're not going to take 2 hours to make a fancy meal. It's not worth it. Why should I bother? Well, if that's true, even in the realm of the physical to the physical, how much more so is that going to be true for the spiritual? In fact, there's actually educational concern about the internet, putting aside, pornography and waste of time and solitaire. Putting all of that aside, there are actually educational theorists who feel that the internet web surfing has permanently affected the ability of people to think in a sustained, disciplined way. Because you go from link to link to link to link, instant information, factoids, but the concept of a sustained argument. In fact, I know that in modern Orthodox high schools in the States, they are very concerned that kids can't learn Gemara anymore. They can't absorb the kind of mental thought processes that Gemara requires. I also know that, a standard college classroom lecture was always 50 minutes, because it was said, although obviously you, this is a better group, but it is said that people cannot concentrate beyond 50 minutes. That's why college classes stop 50 minutes. So on YouTube, where they have a lot of classes online, or even any online, the average class length is now 25 minutes. Or sometimes even 20 minutes, because they basically say that the concentration amount of time has actually gone half, connected to the internet, whatever it would be. Pepsi-Cola had a advertising campaign. I don't know if they still have it. I haven't been following it. But, you know, if you drink enough Pepsi, you have points, and then you can get prizes. So their campaign was so telling to me. It says, drink Pepsi, get stuff. And the concept was, it didn't even make a difference. It didn't even make a difference what the stuff. It wasn't anymore, I want a car, I want jewelry. It wasn't even, I want stuff. I just want stuff, whatever it is. Whatever it is. Although I have to digress for a moment. You know, in one of their commercials, they ran a commercial. It was a joke commercial. That if you got 10 million points, which Pepsi calculated would be impossible, so they could safely say this, they would give you a military jet. And in the commercial, this kid shows up to high school, you know, some of the kids are riding their bicycles and other, and he shows up with a military jet, you know, on there. So anyway, so Pepsi thought they were absolutely safe because nobody could get 10 million points. But some kid in New York, maybe he collaborated with Iran or something, you know, he got 10 million points. And he demanded the jet. He said, you know, you got to live. It's a contract offer. I accept your offer by getting the points. So Pepsi said, come on, you know, it's a joke, you know, a joke. But he took him to federal court. It was a lawsuit in federal court in the Southern District of New York. He lost the case, but but it's interesting, huh? Now, it is against, by the way, it is against the law to buy a military jet. Even if you had the money, you really could not buy a military jet. But he was still claiming damages for breach of contract. Okay, but be it as it may, this is the first midware, going back to the main point, and that is strive for a simplicity of life, a life that is not so makusher, a life that, you know, enjoys the world, a life that is grateful for the Chasdei Hashem, a life that appreciates beauty, but like the midbar, keep it simple. Keep it simple. And I have to say that one of the brachos that I think we do have in Eretz Yisrael is that overall, you know, life is simpler in the sense of being less materialistic. It's actually more complicated in a lot of ways, but in the sense of the simplicity of not being so involved, you know, people work less. What do they say? When they wanted to, there was some discussion about Israel going to the 5-day work week, right, to give it. So somebody said, why are you adding 2 days to the week? Okay. That's an inside joke. But okay. But that's one of the brachas that we see that, you know, the truth of the matter is that even among chilonim, even outside of religion, there's more of an emphasis on family and on spending time with people, not necessarily, looking at earning money and spending money as the primary goal of life. So this is the first midbar. Simplicity. The second midbar is another aspect of midbar. The midbar is a sign of humility, humbleness, lack of pretension. We say in the Amida, V'nafshi ke'afor lakol tia. May I be like the dirt, even if people insult me, even if people try to humiliate me. I ask Hashem, let it not bother me. Let it not pull me down. Let me not be affected with anger at this. Now, we know, in a way, it's a mixed metaphor, because Chazal often use water as a sign of humility. Torah is compared to water, because water goes from the high ground to the low ground. But at the same time, a desert can also be a sign of humility. Right? So I've mentioned three things. Embrace the Torah with enthusiasm, v'yisu mirfidim, simplicity of life, and humility. We now come to the last. Now here already, Rashi does give us guidance based on the Midrash. Vayichan Shem Yisrael. So it already says Vayachanu. Why repeat Vayichan? Rashi points out that the switch from plural to singular teaches us that the Torah could not be accepted until we were Ish Echad Uvalev Echad. There has to be unity. There has to be Avas Yisrael. I, as an individual, am not able to receive Hashem's Torah. It is only through Achdus that we can receive Hashem's Torah. You know, in the Dayenu, coming up, we have all of these things, 15 things. If Hashem would have only done one of them, that would have been enough. And some of them are hard to understand. If Hashem would have split the Yam Suf and not taken us across and dry, Dayenu, well, I'm not sure, Dayenu, if the water closes in. But one of them is, Ilu Kervanu Lifnei Har Sinai. If Hashem would have brought us to Har Sinai, Volo Nasa Manu Es HaTorah, and not give us the Torah, Dayenu, that would have been enough to thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu. What is that so? What would the value be to bring us to Har Sinai if there would be no Torah? And again, there are many, many mefarshim, but one of the answers is that we achieve the level, at least in the short term, of Ish Echad Uvalev Echad. And if all we would have achieved was Ish Echad Uvalev Echad, even without a Matan Torah, Dayenu. Now, Dayenu, you understand, doesn't mean, okay, Dayenu does not mean it would have been enough. We need all the other things, but it would have been enough to be grateful to Hashem. That's the Teich, that is the translation of Dayenu. It would have caused to be grateful, although we obviously need the other things as well. So, this is the Aruch Chaim HaKadosh's fourfold plan. Passion, simplicity, humility, unity. Now, of course, humility and unity are very, very strongly correlated, because humility basically means I'm willing to see the value of the other person. I'm willing to learn from the other person. I'm willing to respect them because they too are made in the image of Hashem, as we are, as each and every one of us is. So really, when there is humility, there's a very good foundation for there to be true unity, because then you're willing to see what is unique and special about the other person. Now, I just want to end with another Gemara, which is based on a thought of the Vilna Gaon. This is a very famous Gemara. This involved the Taner Shel Achnoi. Taner Shel Achnoi was an earthenware oven, and there was a major, major dispute among the Chachamim whether this particular oven could become ritually tamei or not ritually tamei. A majority of the sages said it is tamei. Rabbi Eliezer said it is not tamei, and he could not convince them, and they voted against him, they paskined against him. But he refused to give in, so what he did was he started calling upon Hashem to do miracles to prove that he's right. And he says, if the halacha is like me, let the buxer tree, the carob tree, charuv, fly away. And the carob tree flew away. And the Chachamim said, we don't listen to trees. He then said, if the halacha is like me, let the river reverse its course. And the river reversed its course. And they said, we don't listen to rivers. And then he said, if the halacha is like me, let the walls of this Beis Medrash collapse inward. And the walls were collapsing inward, and Rabbi Yoshua ordered the walls not to collapse. And the walls didn't know, should they straighten up like Rabbi Yoshua, or should they collapse like Rabbi Eliezer, so they remained flat at a 45 degree angle. Ad Hayom Hazeh, that's explaining the crazy architecture of that Beis Medrash. And the Chacham responds once again, we do not listen to walls. So finally he pulls out the big guns, and he says, if the halacha is like me, let there be a voice from Shamayim, a bas kol, that says I'm right. HaKadosh Baruch Hu b'chvodo uviatzmo said, Rabbi Eliezer is right! And the Chachamim say to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we don't listen to you either, because you said in the Torah, lo b'shamayim hi, halacha is not decided by prophecy, and it's not decided by heavenly voices. It is decided by the Chachamim deciding, and therefore you, Hashem, have no right to change the halacha. Now this is very, very nervy, and someone asked Eliyahu HaNavi, what was Hashem's reaction to such a chutzpahdika answer? And Eliyahu HaNavi said, HaKadosh Baruch Hu was laughing, and he said, Nitzchuni Banai, my children have been victorious over me. I'm going to stay out of the fight. I'll let them fight it out. Now, this Gemara is critically important to understand the role of Chazal and the role of human authority and divine revelation, and the fact that even when the Chachamim get it wrong, it becomes the will of Hashem. And those are critically, critically important questions, but I'm not going to talk about that today. I'm going to talk about a minor, small point in the narrative, not the major point, but it's a beautiful thought of the Vilna Gaon. Again, it's a minor point in the overall story, but it connects to the Or HaChaim. The Vilna Gaon says, what was the significance of the particular three miracles that Rabbi Eliezer did before he had the Bas Kol? The tree, the water, and the Beis Medrash walls. The Vilna Gaon says, after Rabbi Eliezer was unable to convince the Chachamim of his arguments, he now wants to convince them by dint of his personality. He's basically trying to say, I am a person who has all of the qualities that a Talmud Chacham needs. And Hashem will be made that I have those qualities. And therefore, listen to me, because I am deserving of being listened to. And the three qualities the Vilna Gaon enumerates, and let's compare them to the Or HaChaim's list. Quality number one, histapkus b'muat, to be satisfied with very little, not to be megusham. That corresponds to the Or HaChaim's first mention of Midbar. And that is the charuv tree. Those of you that had, although I'm told fresh carob tastes good, but I'm used to the, I know from my elementary school years, this very, very hard, dry carob, which literally, breaks your teeth. But in the Gemara, the charuv was a symbol of simplicity and poverty and not seeking wealth and pleasure, excessive pleasure in this world. The great Rabbi Chanina ben Daisa, who is a great, great miracle worker, the Gemara says about Rabbi Chanina ben Daisa, the whole world gets parnasa in his zechus. But Chanina, my son, Hashem says, all he eats is a small measure of charuvim. May Erev Shabbos, the Erev Shabbos. So Rabbi Eliezer is mayed. I am a person that is mistapik b'muat. I am not a person that is involved in the Havlei Olam Hazeh. Therefore, my words need to be listened to. And Hashem will confirm that by the tree, by the charuv. Second quality, the Vilna Gaon says, is humility. And the Or HaChaim located that in the second Midbar. Here, we're using the metaphor of water. The water is mayed. Now, you might ask a question, wait a second here. I want to do a miracle to show how humble I am? Listen to me, I am humble! And I'll prove to you I'm humble because I will make that water go backwards. That sounds like boasting how humble you are. Could that be humility? But in reality, it's not a contradiction at all. Humility does not mean, oh, I'm stupid, I'm no good. Moshe Rabbeinu was praised as the most humble person in the world. So, I ask Moshe Rabbeinu a shaila, and he'll say, no, ask the 5-year-old, he's smarter than me, he knows more than me, I don't know, don't ask me, I'm nothing. If Moshe Rabbeinu would have given that answer, that would not have been praiseworthy, that would have been delusional, that would have been psychotic. Obviously, humility does not mean you're not aware of your talents. Otherwise, how are you going to serve Hashem? But it means that you know that what you were given was a gift from Hashem. And you don't use it in an arrogant way, and you don't look down at others, and you respect others, and you're makir the gifts that Hashem gave other people as well. And you work together with people to be makadesh shem shamayim. So in truth, if Rabbi Eliezer needs to make a point that he's not acting out of ego, that he's not acting out of gaiva, that he's not acting out of self-aggrandizement, he has the right and indeed the obligation to say, Hashem will be made. This is not about me, it's not about my false pride, because Hashem will allow a miracle with the water. You see, it's not inconsistent that a person, if he needs to convey what the emes of Torah is, he may call upon Hashem to certify, I'm acting lishma. Now, the third quality, the Vilna Gaon says you need, is simple hasmada, diligence. You could be a wonderful person with midos, but if one doesn't put in the time to learn, one is not going to be great in Torah. At the Chazon Ish's Levaya, somebody, it was actually a Chashuva person, gave a hesped that the greatness of the Chazon Ish was that from the time he was a child, he learned Torah only l'shem shamayim, only l'shma. Now that, of course, is true. But the Brisker Rav didn't like that. The Brisker Rav was a little cynical, and the Brisker Rav says, when you make a speech like that, you're implying, the Chazon Ish learns and I learn, but the Chazon Ish has a higher madrega than me because he learns l'shma. He says, no! Don't say the Chazon Ish learned l'shma. Say the Chazon Ish learned. Meaning to say, if you were to put in the hours of the Chazon Ish, even if you wouldn't be l'shma, you wouldn't be the Chazon Ish, that's true. But we would be much, 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 much greater than we are. By kind of putting the Chazon Ish on the pedestal of l'shma, you're trying to equate yourself in terms of the basic learning. Basic learning. So, what does that correspond to with the Or HaChaim? So I would suggest that that corresponds with enthusiasm. Because when a person truly loves what they're doing, they lose track of the time. It's not a conscious effort. I've got to stick to the grindstone. It becomes a pleasure. In fact, psychologists have a term for this. It's a popular term as well. A person finds themselves in what's called the zone. And that is, you're doing something, and you just lose yourself in. Now, it could be trivial. It could be playing bridge. I mean, it could be anything. But there's a certain feeling where you're just not aware of the time because you're so engrossed in something. And there's a certain effortlessness. You know, if you have, sometimes in writing, it may hit you. There may be a moments of fluidity and the like. And that comes from the enthusiasm and loving what you're doing. So, the point I want to make is that here we have the two Gedolim, the Gra and the Or HaChaim, and three of their lists match up, three of the items on their list match up very well. The Or HaChaim, first, second, and third, but in different order. The Or HaChaim's list was enthusiasm, simplicity, humility. In the Vilna Gaon's miracles, the charuv was simplicity, the water was humility, and the hasmat correlates with enthusiasm. So what are we missing? In the Vilna Gaon's description of Rabbi Eliezer, we are missing the fourth element of unity, because that indeed was Rabbi Eliezer's problem. What was Rabbi Eliezer's problem? He refused to accept the position of the tzibur. He separated himself from the tzibur. So yes, he had three of the four qualities. It was that last quality that at that point in his life was lacking, because that's exactly what was going on. He was refusing to accept the psak of the tzibur. And by the way, the Gemara is a whole sad story. He was a gadol, great, great gadol, maybe the gadol ador. He was excommunicated. He was put in chayrim. And the rest of his life, he was not allowed, I don't know, we don't know exactly how long he lived after that, but for the rest of his life, he was not allowed to teach Torah. And they didn't even know who would give him this news. And they finally got Rabbi Akiva to give the news. And Rabbi Akiva was his disciple. And Rabbi Akiva walks in, and Rabbi Eliezer is in sickbed. And Rabbi Akiva stands four amos away, because when someone is in chayrim, you don't walk within their four amos. And Rabbi Eliezer has a sense that something is wrong, and he says, what is wrong here? And Rabbi Akiva's words were, it seems that your colleagues have separated themselves from you. And Rabbi Eliezer broke down sobbing. He said, he is like a Sefer Torah that is all wrapped up tightly, that none of the Torah that is within will ever be revealed. It's a whole story. And what's even interesting and sad about it is that the Nasi that put him in Chayrim was Rabban Gamliel, and Rabbi Eliezer's wife was Rabban Gamliel's sister. So they were brothers-in-law and the like. But be it as it may, this is a good example. The Or HaChaim and the Gra is a good example of what we say by Nevi'im, that you have two Nevi'im may have the same message, but they're not misnadim b'signon echad. But they make that message in somewhat of a different language. So be this in May, may we be zocha to incorporate all of these four elements in our lives, and as a result, we will be zocha to a Kabbalah Satorah b'chol yom v'yom.